Hey TSL fam, producer Jeff here, and I'm excited to let you know that we're looking to staff up our winter slash spring intern class. It's a great opportunity to kind of see a peek behind the curtain of what podcast production looks like. You can join for our show recordings, work directly with Megan Lorien, and kind of help shape our voice on social media. So it's a really fun experience. It really gives you an inside look at what podcast production looks like from a nuts and bolts perspective. So if you're a credit eligible university student and you're interested in joining us, go ahead and email thescreenwritinglife@gmail.com with your resume, and please include intern in the subject line, and we'll get back to you. We're looking to get started in mid-January, so start sending us those resumes ASAP. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to The Screenwriting Life. I'm Lorien McKenna, and for today's episode, we are having a conversation with members of the WGA's Inclusion and Equity Committees. We have 9 different committees represented today. So I'm going to ask you all to introduce yourselves before we get started. So you can tell us your name, pronouns if you like, and which committee you represent, a little bit about your community, and what your favorite writing snack is right now. So I'll go first. So Meg and I started The Screenwriting Life because we had a need, right? To feel not alone and to be reminded and encouraged to keep writing. And then this amazing community came out of it, which we are so lucky to be a part of. And my pronouns are she, her, and my favorite writing snack right now is not chips. It is, for better or worse, dried cranberries. So, all right, I'm just going to go around the little circle here of people that I see, and I'm going to start with Frankie Butler.
Howdy, y'all. I'm Frankie Butler. I am the vice chair of the Committee of Women Writers, pronouns she, her. And writing snack, all of the flavors of sparkling water. I like cook and eat very, very heavy meals because I am that kind of Southerner. So less snacks, just more drinking water constantly. Yeah, the Committee of Women Writers is for women, we say women writers, women, non-binary, you know, people who vibe on the she, her end of the spectrum, so to speak. And really just, it's a place for, I think as with all of the inclusion and equity committees, a place to kind of talk about and deal with the issues that are very, very specific to our specific subgroup, in our case, women and non-binary folks, and just kind of building community, figuring out how we can deal with gender inequality in the workplace. You know, really just fun, lighthearted topics like that.
All of our issues are so fun and easy. I'm probably going to encounter that a lot with all of you. All right. Thank you, Frankie. Cameron.
Hello. Yes, Cameron Ali Fay is my name. He, him. I am the co-chair of the Middle Eastern Writers Committee. We formed in 2020, August 2020, during the pandemic. It came from another Iranian Cameron Porcendet, messaging me this inclusion study from the WGA that said, Middle Eastern writers are about 0.3%. And he was like, we gotta form a committee, man. So we formed, and we've more than doubled in size in the past few years. We still haven't met in person officially yet, but we're hoping to next year. And my favorite snack currently is this. I have this massive bag of salted mixed nuts from Costco. So that is on my desk.
Nice. Well, we have a good crafty setup already. Dried fruit, water, mixed nuts. Let's see what else we can get going. Thank you. All right, Catherine.
Hi, I'm Catherine Clinch. I chair the Career Longevity Committee. I'm she, her. And my current favorite snacks are shelled pistachio nuts from Trader Joe's with Monster Zero Orange.
That's fantastic. Maybe for the show notes, we'll list everybody's snacks. All right. Thank you, Catherine. Hilliard. Hi. Welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm Hilliard Guess. I'm the co-chair of the Committee of Black Writers. Our mission is to empower, nurture, increase visibility, and create career and networking opportunities for Black writers in Hollywood. So that's what we're all about. So I would say in the last 10 years, we've become, you know, one of the popular committees, because we're constantly trying to make sure that we are out and about and making sure there's a person of color who looks like us on different panels, stuff like that. You know, I'm definitely part of the reason that's happened. Let me see, I am My pronouns are he, him, and pimp dog. It's a street thing. Y'all don't know nothing about that. shut up. And also, my favorite snacks are Snickers and Red Vines. So, thank you.
Ooh, old school. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Hilliard. Shay.
All right. Yes. First off, my name is Shay Mirzai. I happen to be a person who stutters. I'm also a little bit in the middle of a cold, so we have to contend with a speech impediment and a voice that sounds way worse than normal. I am the co-chair of the Disabled Writers Committee. Our biggest mission is that we try to foster a sense of a sense of community for people who have disabilities. We're a wide mix. We have people with who are deaf, hard of hearing, low vision, wheelchair users, or someone like myself with a so-called invisible disability, in spite of the fact that I feel it's really visible. But that's the goal of our mission, and I'm very happy to be here. My favorite snack at the moment is a huge cup of cold brew, because I don't want to eat anymore, and it keeps me up.
Oh, nice. Yes, I'm really interested in people's caffeine consumption for some reason, like all the different ways we stay awake and manage our attention. So cold brew isn't something I've gotten into yet, but I might try now.
Oh, we'll for sure. I highly recommend it.
Awesome. Thank you, Shay. Anthony, hi.
Hello. Yeah, I'm Anthony Flores from the Native American and Indigenous Writers Committee. It's great to be here. I'm Pyramid Lake Paiute from the Northern Nevada region, as well as Washoe. Our committee exists basically the same as everyone else's, increase of visibility within the Writers Guild. But I would say I take it personally with, I want to increase Native representation in the United States through the stories that we're doing, mostly because, you know, to boil it down, I feel like we are the most talked about, but the least understood and the least in our own homelands, basically. So that is really where it comes from. And I think everyone in the committee feels a certain part of that. But at the end of the day, it's also just to write great stories about all sorts of different American people that exist. And my favorite snack, I found the snack crack that I discovered a few years ago was the Flamin' Hot Smart Food Cheddar Popcorn. So anytime I walk through a Vons, I check the popcorn aisle. And if there's a bag, I'll grab two and see how long they last, which is like 2 days, basically. So other than that, I don't snack. I'm like cranky. I just eat big breakfast and big lunch and get through the day. So thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Anthony. Spiro.
Hey there. Thanks for having me today. I'm Spiro Skansos. I chair the WGA's LGBTQ plus committee. And we kind of seek to be not just a resource to all writers who include LGBTQ characters in their work, but we also want to provide cultural education opportunities for WGA members to nurture the understanding of how sexual orientation and gender identity affects the lives of writers. And we also try to provide networking and social activities that enable our membership to better know one another and create a greater demand for the writing services of LGBTQ plus WGA members. In particular, we're really trying to fight the, hey, do you want to do a queer consultation on this script? And we want queer people to be hired. And right now my addiction is Belvita's, the cinnamon flavor. I eat them like popcorn. It's really dangerous.
What is it?
I eat every 2 hours, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, those crackers, the cookies.
Those little crackers. Yeah.
They're like digestive biscuits or something like that. Is that what they are?
Yeah, I digest a lot of them. Yeah.
So I thank you so much. I want to point out that when you mentioned, hey, do you want to do a queer consultation? Everyone in the Zoom nodded their head, because I think we've all been in that situation. Instead of, hey, will you come write on this show or write this movie? It's, hey, will you come make this character more believably X?
I think we've all been approached by that, by the way. For every committee, they're like, we don't need you, we just need you to ask you some questions.
Yeah, we could talk more about that.
Yeah, I would like to,
because I think some people may not know what that means.
In the meantime, let's get on with our introduction. So we have Christina with a C.
That's me. Yes. Hi, everybody. my name is Christina Pena. I am the chair of the Latinx Writers Committee at the Guild. The Latinx Writers Committee actively represents the professional, creative, social, and economic interests of the Latinx Guild members. And we encourage Latinx writers to become active within the Guild while trying to raise the profile and perception of Latinx writers in the industry. Like many of us here, we are here as a safe space for writers to collaborate and to discuss anything they want to talk about within the industry and their profession, as well as trying to encourage each other and uplift each other when times feel tough, especially as a Latin group of people. We are not a monolith, and we are many different cultures all kind of lumped into one with very different life experiences, language, dialogue, culture, food, all kinds of stuff. But yes, my snack of choice right now, I think, is going to be Mr. Peanut's The Honey Glazed Peanuts. I think they're crack and super delicious.
That's a throwback. It's pretty solid. All right. Thank you. And Christina with a K.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really glad to be here. My name is Christina Wu. I'm the chair of the Asian American Writers Committee. My pronouns are she and her. Everyone has said it so well. The Asian American Writers Committee exists to provide a community space, both virtual and in-person and like emotional, for any writer that identifies as Asian American, which is a very large umbrella term for a lot of different kinds of people. But we seek to really just sort of like foster community, provide support, provide encouragement. Yeah, and I think also just sort of give voice to people and give a space to people who might feel a little bit alone in their writing career. Like, I feel like every time we have some sort of gathering, whether it's virtual or in person, I always hear at least one comment of, I can't believe how many of us there are. I think writing can, you know, even if you are a television writer like I am, like, it can be very solitary. And so knowing that there are other people in your community that you can like have a shorthand with, and just like, you don't need to explain all the things that you're experiencing, you can just kind of get to the heart of the matter. That is, you know, a big reason for why this committee exists. And my snack. I try not to snack when I write, because if I snacked, then I wouldn't be writing. I would just be snacking. So I drink a lot of tea and water and seltzer.
Well, thank you, everyone. I really appreciate that. And so, yeah, it seemed like they're hit on a few places where I saw a lot of head nodding, right? Talking about coming to groups to get consultations. All of you are advocating not just for community, but, you know, resources within your groups to try to help people get jobs, right? And also that each of your groups is not a monolith, you know? So I'd like to talk a little bit about those things. And then, because there's so many of us, if you could just say your name, you know, your name and your committee or your name, you all have very distinct, beautiful voices. But I think just for our audience, because there's so many of us to sort of identify you, I just want to get right into it and like talk about what it's like when a studio comes to you and says, will you write about the experience? Spiro, go ahead.
I don't think that any of us are talking about when a writer friend goes to another writer friend and like, hey, did I nail this, you know, element or not? But there are shows that will, instead of hiring a writer, let's say you've got a whole bunch of gay people on your, gay characters on your show, and instead of hiring a gay character, or a gay writer, you'll say to a gay writer, hey, can I pay you $500, $1,000, whatever for this consultation? The problem with that is that, one, you didn't consult with anyone from the very beginning. So that element, that feeling, that authenticity isn't in the DNA of your show. And two, that writer's getting screwed because they're not getting paid any pension and health, as well as any WGA minimum for their work. And that's an issue, a reoccurring issue, I think, for all of these groups. And I know we've had a lot of requests over the past couple of years, even in for trans and non-binary people to do this. And I know a Middle Eastern person who, a friend of mine, was consulting on a hit show on Hulu for this, you know, and not getting paid any, you know, WGA minimum. So I think that's, to define it, was what I wanted to make sure that we did first.
I totally understand everybody's frustration, because I've sat through the committee meetings where you talk about it and my heart goes out to you. But on the flip side, nobody has ever come to our committee and said we'd like an authenticity read on older characters. And so we get put into this Moebius loop of perpetual stereotyping that does not in any way reflect who we are or what we do as individuals. And as a result of that, we are designated as unhirable, because who wants that around the office, really, you know? So this is something that we aspire to be able to complain that they're coming to us for that, because they're definitely not hiring us. And they are blatantly saying, you know, older people will slow down the room. I mean, in one of the other committee meetings that I'm on, someone actually said the biggest challenge they face is convincing showrunners we're not going to slow down the room. So when you have slow older people who can't do technology, who don't understand the different things going on, it just makes our life worse. So there's a balance there.
Oh, Shay, did you have something? Go ahead.
We're very aware of like the big problems here. The fact that it usually offers a pittance. We should be there from the very start. I would also like to add that there are some very big things wrong with like the powers involved, because even if you're brought in as a consultant and what they're showing you is way off base. If you say no, here's what's wrong with your story, you got to fix this, and this. I've heard stories from my friends who have done this. They don't want to hear it. And if they do, it's like, well, we're too far down the line. We're not going to go fix this and this and this. So we appreciate your time. Bye. So at the very end, it really isn't even about these studios or whoever learning about our perspectives. They basically just want to say, oh, well, we tried. We did our best. We reached out. Here's our movie. Bye.
Wow. Yeah. That sounds really hurtful. Yeah. Hilliard, go ahead.
I get sent on a lot of assignments where somebody White has written something and they bring you in. They don't say it's a, and it's, I'm curious to know if anybody else has seen this. I'd say I've done probably 7 of these projects in the last 4 years. And every time in their pitch, it would say, this is not a White Savior project. But I'm gonna tell you, here's the giveaway. And I'm curious, I know Spiro has probably done these too. Here's the interesting thing. Here's the first giveaway. The first character that they break down is a White character. Giveaway. That tells me this is not about that character you wanted me to focus on. You know what I mean? So I always call it out. As soon as we start, I'm like, oh, this project is amazing. Here's the problem. But here's how I fix it. Mm. I always do that.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And I'm doing it on purpose so they can stop going that way before they come to us, you know? So I'm letting them know, you don't have to do that to get that done. You can just come straight to the source, you know? Because if you give it to, excuse my phrase, white cis male, they're probably gonna write it from a white gaze. They can't help it. It's like instinctually how they think, you know what I mean? So anyway, I was just curious if anybody else is going through that. I felt like they were covering some of the other stuff that Spiro was talking about. But that's the other thing that I'm dealing with. I'm always brought in and I read the pitch and I'm like, oh, I know what the problem is. I got to change the whole perspective, you know.
Are you being asked to read the pitch, or are you being asked to focus on a specific character for a reason?
No, they want me to come in and take out the pitch to see if I want to come in and write the project. And I always realize why I was brought on when they already got this so-called writer.
I see.
Guild, you know, and okay. I'm like, oh, I know what's missing here. It's not black enough. They just won't say it. It's missing the nuance, you know.
Christina here. Just echoing yes and to everyone, there's a lot of food for thought. I did want to plug this 2 amazing resources that I think help writers generally when we are writing from different perspectives. The first one being from the think tank Inclusion Equity organization, otherwise known as TIE. They're incredible. A lot of us work with them all the time. And there's another organization called Storyline Partners. You can just Google them real quick, TTIE or Storyline Partners. And both of them have incredible resources called fact sheets that help you write very authentic, or you would help very authentic characters from those unique perspectives. So for instance, I'm currently writing a pilot with
a lesbian character and a gay character, but obviously I identify she, her, I'm a cisgendered woman, but at the same time, I don't identify as those characters. So I know that if I want to write them to the best of my ability, I definitely can call all of my friends who are also writers and at this current moment post-strike doing a lot of things. So I can just go on to Storyline Partners or Tie and at least get a framework for what I want to discuss or what I want to show. And trying to be as cautious as possible to make sure I don't do the things that they say don't do or the things they want to see more of from screenwriters in their work. So I try to move in that direction. And then, of course, when I'm done with a draft, what I've done before I've gone to my reps is I go to my friends and say, hey, can you read this? This is an authenticity pass in like a technical sense, but it's not like, hey, I'm like, you know, hopefully it's not so like, hey, I need you to read this so make sure that I'm not being the worst person ever. I mean, it technically is that, but I hope it's coming from a good place and from the bottom of my lovely heart, rather than like, I would totally love to pay you for this. It's more of a friend to friend thing. Because if they need something from me as a Latina lady, I'm always willing to do it for free. So at least among writers, I know that that is an acceptable practice and something we encourage. Whereas, of course, what we're really talking about here is with buyers, studios, and producers. But just wanted to plug those resources.
No, that's great. And while you were talking, a couple people put in the chat some other resources. Hilliard, you said Women of Color Unite has this. And Spiro, writeinclusion.org fact sheets has this. So we'll include all these in the show notes. And if anybody else has any other resources to share, we'll include those as well. Cameron.
Yeah, this is a hot topic, I think. And it's a newer topic for us as a newer committee, but we have, on one hand, we don't have that many opportunities to do authenticity passes because there aren't that many movies and shows with Middle Eastern characters unless they're of the terrorist variety. So we're, you know, when we do get these opportunities, really we focus on educating our members as to, look, I don't want to stop you from making a couple thousand dollars if you're going to, you know, read a script and give some general thoughts to make the character on screen more well-rounded. But if you're actually like pitching story stuff, real stuff, like you start doing it, it's a fine line. If you find yourself starting to write, that's when they come to us and we start to go in there with the WGA and try to get them, you know, as at least like a staff writer, if it's a show, or a rewrite or a polish fee if it's a movie. We recently had an Academy Award winning actor, white actor who had a white writer on a movie that's shooting in Saudi Arabia, and they wanted a female Saudi Arabian actress. Writer. And it was a great process until at the end the actor was like, oh well, the main writer doesn't want to actually share this. We just want some general advice at first. And I was like, look, I won't stop. You know, I'm not going to get in the middle of one of our members having coffee with an Oscar-winning actor. But if it goes beyond coffee, you guys and your studio are going to need to, because it's a big movie, you know, need to hire someone. And to his credit, he absolutely got it. He reframed everything and he got the studio to step up and hire a writer on that at the end of the day. But It's a murky process. I assume everyone will agree that every project is quite different. And the saddest thing that I've seen really is that there are shows, and we've had a couple members on a specific show where they wanted writers from Afghanistan, and they were hired. It's great. They're getting that great salary as a writer on the show, and they were not listened to at all. And anytime they were brought up, there was like, oh, this is a funny joke. Like, what if they're eating dog? And they're like, we don't eat dog. Like, what are you talking about? We don't do that. They're like, no, but for the joke, it works. And so then we had to come in and sit down with the EPs and showrunners, and like, it got a little messy. And that's really the worst part of all of this to me is the fake hire, is the hire for optics. And then we're not going to actually listen so that the on-screen portrayals are better. That's the thing that that gets me every time.
Backing up a little bit, and I see other people want to, I'm going to get to everybody. Cameron, you said part of your job is to advocate for that writer within the WGA. I assume most of you play a role similar to that. If someone in your committee comes to you and says, oh God, what do I do? Like, if part of a community, this is a safe place to go and say, hey, Spiro, I'm having coffee with this person and I'm afraid of getting taken advantage of. So, I mean, I think that's fair to say that you all, that's a part you play with WGA writers. What if a non-WGA writer reaches out to you?
We actually, for the LGBTQ plus committee, we are currently doing a mentorship program where members of our committee are mentoring LGBTQ writers who are not WGA in order to be like a source for them. And it's a prerequisite for our members who are participating in a membership where they are mentored by a, not necessarily a LGBTQ person, but an upper level allied writer to mentor them. And in order to be part of that mentorship, you actually have to mentor a pre-WGA LGBTQ person. And there's the rainbow pages that we have for WGA members. And then there's like a pre-WGA rainbow pages. And that's where that relationship came from.
I will also say that when you do join the WGA, because if you're listening to this podcast, you're obviously going to be a member of the WGA at some point. It's just, it's going to happen for you. It just hasn't happened yet. All of our committee dates and all of our meeting dates are in the WGA Inclusion and Equity newsletter. So when you join, you start getting lots and lots of emails. And many people ignore those emails. Do not ignore the fucking email. Read the fucking email.
Is that the topic of this? That's the subject of our email of the podcast. Read the fucking email.
Love it.
I just want to jump in and also just add to what Frankie's saying. If the way that you get the inclusion and equity emails is if in your WJ profile, once you become a member, you basically have to like check off all the different like categories of things that you identify as. And so as long as you identify as those things and make that public, like that puts you on the equity inclusion list.
Awesome.
And I also just wanted to like jump in this larger conversation because I feel like, so I only became the chair of the Asian American Writers Committee like a summer and a half ago, like 1.5 years ago. And I sort of foolishly didn't realize how much of what we are talking about is a part of the job. Like I really thought it was just like, oh, I just get to pick speakers and like, you know, host meetings and make friends. And then things like that horrible shooting in Monterey Park happens. And then things like what we are talking about happens. And you're like, oh my God, I have to be a leader in my community. And I think like the thing that makes me kind of sad when I hear us all talk about this issue of like cultural consultancy is like, and it is, it's absolutely not something that is discussed or that you are considering when you want to be a writer, when you want to come work in the business. I think it really bothers me that the onus is on us to make the decision as to whether or not we should take these jobs, as opposed to it being like a deeply seated and critically thought out process or issue that should stem from the people creating these jobs. Because at one point, like I'm a mid-level writer and I have walked away from things where I'm like, I've told them like, I am not the right person for this, but you, I guess, don't feel like looking for any more Asian writers. So you picked me. Like, or, you know, it also is really unfortunate where people maybe feel some shame where they do feel like they want to take a job or need to take a job because they need the money or they want to make that connection with that relationship or, you know, with that producer or that writer or whatever it may be. And then it's like, we're the ones holding the bag with like, what am I comfortable with doing? And I'm sure that there are a lot of people listening to this podcast who are like, fuck off. I would kill to have a job like this. So like, I understand that, but I just don't like that the onus is put on us. You know what I mean? Like it should be, if we're going to have an honest conversation, let's actually like have an honest conversation with our employers about this.
People who are not part of the dominant group in a culture are almost always capable of writing the dominant group in the culture because we live in that world. That is the water that we are swimming in.
Yes.
Like I can pretty much, I grew up in a like Southern Catholic community, but also because this is a very kind of like WASPy culture. You want me to write like WASP Protestant like dudes? You want me to write, you know, Midwestern suburbs? I can do all that.
Yeah.
Because that is the media I have been surrounded by. That is the people I have been surrounded by. Like, I can do that in my sleep. It might be more difficult for someone to write, say, a third gen Korean teenager, for Korean American teenager from Philly. Right. You can write that on the kind of like your YA teenage girl level pretty well. Mm-hmm. But if you want like your little bit of cultural specificity on both the Philly side and the Korean American side, maybe you want to call somebody. Right. And I would probably like reach out to Christina and be like, yo, can you shoot an email to your committee and see if there are any like Korean American folks who, you know, want to help me with this YA thing. You know, if I'm doing it myself, I will be like, yo, I'll toss you whatever cash I can. And one of the things that we do as committee leadership is that if studios want to come to us, or if executives want to come to us, we can shoot that email to our committee, like with the understanding of like, hey guys, there's this thing you can submit for and there's money behind it. Because I am always very, very happy to like give people, to like open people up to opportunities where they might actually get like a reasonable paying job.
And then there's the spec situation where I have a friend who's a very talented writer who wrote a script about a man in history that is a Black man that is not, has never been explored in a movie before. And he was moved by what this guy did. He researched for over a year before actually writing. He talked to professors, and he ended up writing the script on spec as a white male. And George Tillman, the director, read it, said, I feel like this is the script I was born to direct. They got it to Sterling K. Brown. He said, I feel like this is the role I was born to play. And if this writer said, but I'm white, I shouldn't even go down that road, I think that would have been a mistake, because I think this movie is going to be, I hope it gets made. It's very powerful with the people that have come behind it now. And this writer, you know, started that process because it hadn't happened yet. And I think you have that right. If you know, not to jump on something else someone's doing, but you're saying like, this story, this person moves me, I'm going to write it. And maybe someone else will write it before me, and that's fine. I think for your listeners, wherever they are in their career, starting out or if they're experienced, you know, I do think there's a difference between, you know, writing a story, maybe it's outside your lived perspective, but you are compelled, you feel passionate, whether it's a comedy, drama, whatever. And then like the like, hey, you're kind of in this, you're from this background. Can you make me feel good? Or your name is kind of what I want on the script right now. Can I put that? Like, that's the cynical side of it that sucks. But I think there is a difference between the two.
It's also not every incoming email that we get is like, come do this dirty work for us for $5. It's like a lot of them are also like OWAs, like real things that people pitch on that, like, yeah, maybe if you don't have an agent or a manager, you know, that you don't have people out in the marketplace speaking on your behalf and like seeking these things out for you. So it's not all just like,
yeah, I think that's important
work.
The studios aren't, especially in light of recent events, not everyone is out to get us and take advantage of writers all the time. That there are lots of positive stories that we can talk about too, our own experiences of like successes we've had. And I think that's really great. Spiro, is leaving us to go do a paid job for money. I know the other people, I see you, Anthony, Catherine, Shay, but I want to make sure that Spiro, you get your talkie talks in before you have to leave.
Oh, that's very thoughtful of you. Thank you. I actually was going to say something that might be, I don't know how other people feel about it, but in this conversation, I shouldn't say we, but I am not saying this is for the writers who are out there who, you know, who are getting started, wondering how it's all done as far as, you know, encompassing voices. I don't think that you cannot write someone who's not you. Like, I have friends, like, I write about people who are in my world. I have friends who are Native American and I have friends who are gay, and I have friends who are trans, like all of this stuff. So when I write, I'm going to be like, oh, this character reminds me of my friend who's happens to be trans, you know, or whatever. And so I'm gonna, you know, like have a trans character in my script, or I'm gonna have a black character in my script, because these are people who not only populate my world, but they're in our world. And the idea being that I have this idea for a show, I'm gonna put these people in it, and when it goes to series, I'm gonna hire people who I can make sure can really land these voices in a way that I could not. But I'm still gonna write these pilots with a variety of people in mind, because that's my world. And, you know, I just want, that's like, I don't know if this is a differing opinion than most people, but I think you shouldn't be told what you can and can't write, but you should be very aware of how it can come off as you're not part of a community. It has a fetishist or colonialist take on a character. You know, in my teaching, that I've been doing a lot of teaching lately as well. And I've had people who are like, this, a Midwest woman, white Midwest woman wanted to write a script, and it was like a guy who's a doctor who's Native American, but he's using his like magical ways to cure people. And then like the black nurse who is like a former crack addict. And it was like the doctor who came in dressed in the opposite gender because he had a patient who was a lesbian. And I was like, honey, no, we can't do that. Like,
it's not a personality. I mean, like, those things are not a personality, yeah. Right? They're not a character. Yeah.
And like, this is where I think it's important. I think this is where I think a lot of us are talking about is like, be aware of the cliches that are out there. Be aware of the damaging cliches, the stereotypes that are out there, and think of something different. Think of something new and that hasn't been seen before. Like, and that's what the Thai fact sheets are really helpful for, because you can be like, oh, I want to write the story about, you know, the magical Indian doctor who cures people and goes to, you know, teepees. And like, no, how about a little different? Like right now, I'm really excited about Foundation on Apple because there's gays in space, and I haven't seen gays in space before, you know? So I just wanted to chime
love
in on
show,
that component
by the way.
Of our story, of this conversation.
Spiro, why is Gays in Space not your next pilot?
Every time I get a new rep, I sit down with them and I always say this, just to piggyback off of what we're all talking about. I always say, now the script you may have read may have a bunch of black characters in it, but let me give you this analogy. I say, you know how it is that all of the actors we see, we realize, oh my God, they're Australian, they're South African, they're English. I said, you know why? Because they're inundated by us. So are we by you white folks. We can write you guys, as Frankie said, in our sleep, right? We live in a white people's world. I don't know why they don't think we could do that. Now I'm surprised, and I'm sure everybody else in here, I'm surprised when you know us well. That's why I'm like, ooh, they got the nuance down. You know what I mean? When they don't, that's when we see you a mile away that something is not in that room, you know? Mm. And so anyway, I just wanted to add that little part, but thank you guys.
It's the main problem is when you don't take the note. Every first draft is garbage. Yes. Every first draft of everything everyone ever writes is garbage. If your first draft isn't garbage, I don't know what kind of fucking magical human being you are. So, like, listen when people are like, yeah, maybe don't do that. And, like, maybe someone will be mad at you. Maybe the one person who you give the script to is going to be like, yeah, that was a little And that sucks, because getting told that we fucked up sucks. But that's also the process. And it is the process when you write something that is racially insensitive. It is the process when you write something that might be a little insensitive to the trans community. It is also the process when your like third act doesn't work.
It's about finding your connection to it.
Yeah.
You know, when you come with, like, I think Spiro said it perfectly, like, my best friends are these people.
Yeah.
He actually has history. It's not just like I came up with this idea about this Native American character who does this out of your ass. It's I grew up 5 miles away from the reservation and I knew these people. Like, now you have something to it. At least I'll at least understand that. That's just my opinion. You got to have that connection to it.
Right. I think that's just true of being a writer. And I guess it's true here, too. But bringing it to people who you trust.
One last thing about we write what we know. I have always believed you write what you can understand. In 1981, I wrote a script, and it was a woman, dark thriller. I have revised this script repeatedly. One of my agents read it and said, "This is amazing. I'm going to send it out." She sends it out. I get called for a meeting at a company. I don't know anything about this company. What I didn't realize was it was Black producers, Black director, Black staff. And I walk in and say, "Hi, I'd like to see so-and-so. I have an appointment," because they loved my script. Now I've got people walking by and looking at me because they thought my script character was Black. And what she was humane. And she was a woman. And she was a woman in predicaments. And so if we don't stop talking about all of our different, every one of us has the same exact issues and the same insults. So I just felt I needed to get that out.
Thank you. I think that's such, all those things are so valid. And I think it's so important that we're talking about this stuff of how the industry is changing, how we talk about ourselves and how we're planning for and looking to the future with all these issues. So thank you, Catherine. Really good points.
It goes into, I think, a thing that we've been talking about, which is kind of intersecting sort of identities and like intersecting difficulties, because it is, ageism is very real. Ageism feels differently as a man, as a woman. There is a difference, there are a lot of us who are on multiple committees who have multiple intersecting identities. And that's one of the kind of great things is that, like, yes, we are all in the leadership of our various and assorted committees, but like, I've also been to multiple other committees as a member. And getting to kind of build these relationships that kind of cross over and like get to have every sort of part of yourself seen and those mm-hmm. difficulties kind of like having multiple intersecting communities is really, really a beautiful thing about these committees, about each other.
This actually speaks to like a major goal or like what we do on our committee. There's the fact that we're talking about how we can't bring up age, especially for women identifying writers. We also can't talk about disability. I feel like we're the last group that has ever made a part of these talks. If you look at several at several studio DEI reports, they never mentioned us at all. And this is also the same in many other fields. And I feel like the stigma of it being able to self-identify is still so strong in our community. And so I would like to speak on that from like a little bit of a personal level. So speaking to the fact that disability itself is not a whole identity. It doesn't exist without some more aspects of who you are. Like I'm gay, I'm Persian. I also happen to be a person who stutters. About 4 or 5 years ago now, I finally got tired of not putting the fact that I have a speech impediment on like my WGA my WGA page. And it's like I was more afraid of coming out as a stutterer than as a person who is gay. And we hear that all the time. It's like if people learn that I'm hard of hearing or that I have low vision, I'm never going to get a job. I mean, the first half of my career, I worked my way up from an unpaid intern to the head of a studio story department. And the entire time, it's like I had to face this uphill battle. It's like, oh, Shay can't work the phones. Shay can't talk in meetings. I had to overcome all of that. And I'd just like to mention this because, again, our community is perhaps the most stigmatized because the wrong assumptions that people make that we can't do this job. And this is mentioned was a bit earlier by Frankie about how marginalized groups are able to write the dominant society. We're definitely capable of doing that because we have to navigate this world often from spots where we really have to work uphill. So again, I really would like to stress the importance of the fact that if you have a disability, you should be able to say you do. You should be able to own it. You should be able to incorporate it as a core part of your of who you are, because there's nothing wrong with it.
Thank you so much. Anthony, go ahead. You've had your hand up for a while.
Yeah, first I just wanted to say, yeah, I think my perspective has been as a writer in this town is that if, you know, writers' rooms are where we should be able to discuss all the shit that we need to discuss as a country, because I think if we're coming at it from the right angle, if we're coming at characters and story from a place of, like you said, not a, where we can be vulnerable and accept that we're not the center of the universe when we're writing, and we can take a note and we can be wrong and we can fail, essentially, that once you can overcome that as a writer, and I'm saying this as anyone else who's going to listen, is like, we have to be able to fail in order to correct that. And I think that that's been a helpful piece of advice that I got early on, because you're never going to get everything right. And I think that's the same angle that I come at when we're talking about people who approach you about characters, and it's so easy to say, oh, you're stupid, you don't know what you're talking about, I'm Native, like, that's not my tribe, get the hell out of here, go talk to somebody. You know, there's a lot of ways to respond to that, but I think as the co-chair of my committee, we get a lot of different requests, and it's about the intention behind it, and like, where are they at in the process, and how can I best help this person? Sometimes they are just asking for a pass, and you know, you take that, you try to deal with it as best you can. Maybe you pass it. A lot of times I just send the committee and say, hey, this guy's looking for a so-and-so writer. Like, anybody want to jump on this? Cause that's like, I'm not their boss. They want to do it, they can do it, you know? But I loved what Catherine was saying, you know, as a writer, another piece of advice is, it's like, are you writing a shadow of a shadow? And I think the Native people in this country have suffered and really continue to be stereotyped on stereotypes. So we are being written as shadows of shadows of shadows from 1800s and on. And I think that's the battle that we've been fighting. And I know there's other communities that, you know, are newer to this country, and they're seeing it already, you know? And so we're getting, and so I think if you're trying to write characters you don't know, you have to sort of decide, okay, am I writing somebody I know? Am I writing a version of somebody now? Or am I writing just somebody that's a shadow? Am I just writing a shadow of something that I saw on TV when I was growing up that I really liked? Yeah. Because if you don't dive into that and decide, okay, how can I change that? Or how can I make this character different or more nuanced? Then you're just going to end up writing the same thing. You probably will piss some people off because it's been 30 years and we're seeing the same thing over and over and over and over again. And I think that comes from the heart, that comes from like who you are as a writer. Are you writing what you know? Are you bleeding from it when you write these characters? Or are you just trying to be funny and you don't really care? And people are going to do that. And one of the things that I want to speak to, and I'm only going to speak from the Native perspective, which is just so you can forgive your all selves for messing some stuff up. I worked on a show called Dark Winds. It was about, there's been several Native shows recently. There's a reason why there were fictional tribes or no tribes mentioned, because it's very easy. There's 500 different tribes in this country. We get requests for, you know, we don't have 500 Native writers, let alone one from every tribe. So we'll get requests for this part, you know, this tribe or that tribe from the Northeast, from the Northwest, from the South, from the Southwest, you know, Arizona. I've never seen a Nevada tribe. That's where I'm from. So that's what I always pitch. But ultimately, what I'm saying is that I got hired to write about Navajos. And, you know, they have their own culture and their own people and their own way of looking at history, their own way of looking at their own superstitions, which they have them. Cultures have superstitions. some people call him a stereotype, but it's because somebody wrote about it as a shadow of a shadow. And so, you know, on the first season, we did the best we could. Our room was constantly 5 Native writers in there, 2 were Navajo, somewhere, and we're trying to figure out this thing. We make the show. No one talks about any of that stuff, the superstition, the witches, anything. They got upset that the actors didn't speak Navajo perfectly, which is an intensely hard language. And I'm not going to, and they have a right to be, you know, that's their language. They didn't like it, but it was like, you talk about failing as somebody within our own Native culture. It was like, wow. Yeah, man, we did so much thinking we got so much. And I took the win of like, well, they didn't say anything about the other stuff. So clearly we did a good job. You know, was it perfect? No, but if we can't do a perfect job in our own community, then, you know, I forgive a lot of people when they come and ask me. And the perspective is really, like you said, Christina, it's like trying to come at it from an angle of like, how do you start in the right spot? Because I think that's what ends up happening, is that it feels like we're an afterthought. You know, Taika Waititi was in an interview recently, and he's like, you all broke it, why don't you all fix it? So I thought it was funny, because basically what he's saying is, I'm going to write my stuff. I'm going to write my shit the way I want to write it. People are making it. I get to have my own voice. Like, why are you coming to me to talk about the system that you broke? You know, right. Let me take the lead then, if that's what you want. And I think that's really what it is. Is if you want to fix the system, you don't, especially when it comes to other people's culture, you let them tell the story and that's it. But that's the battle we're fighting, is how do we get in there? Because, you know, my community is very small in the grand scope of everything. So we have to be loud voices. We have to speak up, but I also think we have to be forgiving.
I'd like to change the subject and talk about how we solve some of these problems. Because I have given an enormous amount of thought. Look, I've chaired the Committee of Women Writers, the new members committee, the social committee when we had it. I've been on the board of directors. I've been on the Film Society committee. And I am like a walking compendium of Guild history. And I have seen a consistent story going all the way through. And it is, nothing is going to change for any of us unless we change this story. And that is that people got to the position they're in as showrunners, as studio executives, as major producers, because they have more talent than we do. And the fact is they don't. They had more opportunity. And for every single person in a diversity category, we have lacked opportunity at one way or another. Until we say stop and mean it, it's never going to change. So we have to break that. About 15 years ago, there was an age discrimination lawsuit. And it was done with the best of intention by people who really thought this was the only option. They hired a class action attorney out of Washington, D.C., who only knew how to deal with class action lawsuits, not with Hollywood. No relationships, no experience. And what happened was everybody got a check. And what needed to happen there was for the agencies to agree, we will take one older writer for every agent we have. I would have rather had that than a check. And the people who were named plaintiffs never work again.
Thank you so much, okay. Catherine. Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Yeah, we can all speak to that, think about that, make choices about that. Yeah, thank you.
Definitely. Thank you, Catherine. Thank you, everybody. I know we're getting close to time, but I just wanted to say thank you all so much. This is always an incredibly enlightening discussion when we get together. Yeah, I just wanted to jump in and say yes and everything, and also to speak to the audience generally of up-and-coming emerging screenwriters, that whenever you hear these discussions, and if you feel discouraged because you're one of us from a specific BIPOC or older demographic, just know that at the end of the day, the same rules still apply. Like, yes, they're made to be broken sometimes, and yes, they might be shortcuts sometimes, but the rules still apply to the industry, which is write an undeniable sample, write an undeniable script, the only script that you can write from your heart. If it doesn't make it as a script, write it as a book, write it as a graphic novel, make a TikTok short form video series about your dollhouse from 1998 that you still love, AKA myself, and try to do things that get you to be passionate to tell the stories you want to tell. And know that there are barriers of entry and there are gatekeepers in this industry. We talked about it a lot today.
But you can always be strategic. It's something that I try to talk about with writers all the time who feel, especially post-strike right now, whether they're emerging, whether they're established, everyone is feeling some kind of way. And everyone's like, I don't know where to go in my career. I don't know how to break into this to HBO. I don't know how to get to where I want to be. And I always say over and over again, even to myself when I'm panicking, you just have to be strategic. Write your undeniable sample. Figure out which producers you would love to work with who might be great for that sample. Try to make sure that you're getting into competitions, fellowships, constantly just trying to tell your story and your passion, your heart will always take you farther than just, you know, sometimes the looking down the barrel of, oh my God, there's so many challenges. How am I going to climb this mountain? Your oxygen tank for that mountain is your heart and your passion. And that will always get you above the line, no matter what. I have found with executives who will tell me to write a Mexican story when I'm first generation Cuban American. And if I, you know, try to say no, or I walk away, or I offer another writer who I think would be great from the job, I've learned that they take to heart the fact that I say no. And the fact that I go, well, actually, you know, I hear you on this. This other writer could be good for it. And then maybe if I'm feeling really spicy, no pun intended for being Latina, I totally try to go in and say, you know, I think this other producer might be better. And that kind of scares them a bit. Always know that you have power in the sense of your original voice and in your identity. Even though today we've talked a lot about things that may make you feel powerless, just know that at the end of the day, like, this industry is set up for you to fail in many, many ways. And the greatest success and the greatest power you can have is owning yourself and walking to the room saying, I don't really care if you want me to write this Mexican story. I'm just going to walk away. Or, yeah, I guess I'll try it, but I'm really not going to like it. And I'm going to make sure you understand that this was dumb. And that's taking a huge risk. But, and I come from some privilege, I have some money saved, like, I understand that I'm okay right now, but in about a month, I will need to get my survival job and all of this confidence might go away. But at the end of the day, again, write from your heart and just keep trucking. That's all you can do.
Thank you. That's great advice. Frankie?
Yes, I just want to second what Christina just said. The most power that you have a lot of times is the power to say no, and the power to walk away, and the power to, when something feels sketchy, when something feels weird, when something feels wrong, to like bounce away from it. And like, as a labor union who is in the business of making sure that people do not do sketchy things to our members, even if you can always go on the Writers Guild website, you can look up if someone is a guild signatory, you can call our legal department, be like, hey, is this a thing people can do? Even if you are not a member of the Writers Guild, those are resources that are there for you. And just because we are all committee leadership and we are all about our committees, I just wanted to say some quick things that our committees do. In Le Before times, before the pandemic sort of shut all of our offices down for the safety of our wonderful, wonderful guild staff, who we could not do anything without. We did a lot of in-person panels. I think we'll probably be back to doing more in-person sort of panels and things in 2024, hopefully. We do a lot of Zoom events. We, as Catherine said earlier, love to get executives into our meetings to talk to our members, to introduce them to our members, to sort of be like, hey, this is what my company is doing. This, my company that you may not have ever heard of, might have a thing that you, writer over here, like, are absolutely perfect for. So that is a thing that we do. And also, I love the people on this chat. Some of them are like my actual friends. And we get to work together a lot. So there have definitely been times when the Committee of Black Writers has done a thing and they're like, nah, I feel like this is a very like woman focused thing. Do you guys want to like partner up on this? And then we do, and we get to, you know, partner together on things, and it's amazing. And so much of what we do is about, like, we talked a lot about kind of the nuts and bolts of writing diversity today, which is a super important conversation to have, but getting each other jobs, talking about the real shit that matters. We've had panels and symposiums and just like town halls to be like, hey, this is some fucked up shit that's happening to me. Is it happening to any of you? And being in community with each other to try and make things better is a thing that we, you know, have gotten pretty okay at over the years. And I just want to say that I'm glad to be in community with these awesome people.
Awesome. Thank you. Hilliard?
First of all, again, thank you for having all of us. We appreciate it. The whole team over there, Jeff and everybody, your show is great. Here's what I wanted to say. I love what Catherine had to say and what everybody else was just saying there. So one of the things that I did was I met a writer on LinkedIn who's 73, who's a white queer writer, and I offered to read something, thought he was pretty dope. He lives in West Hollywood, met him for lunch, and he asked me to be his mentor. And I was like, huh? Because I have like 15 little mentees that in and out for years. And I was like, why not? So for like the last 6 months, I've been working with this writer, helping him get his stuff together. Even though he's 73, it's his story. It's his story that is fascinating. Former lawyer, super smart. I'm like, dude, if I get a room, you're coming. Trust me. You know what I mean? Like, that is where we need to be going. So I just wanted to say, to echo what Catherine was saying, is it's our job to bring them in. We always focus on bringing in, I call them the kids, you know, but there's no reason we can't bring these other people in too. They have superpowers way beyond, like Catherine just gave us her resume and all of our mouths were dropping. You know what I mean? You forget you're dealing with wisdom there. You know what I mean? So I just want to say that. The second thing that I wanted to say was, this is just something that I always say. We're at a time, and you know this, Lorianne, being a showrunner yourself, where it's difficult to convince the studios to allow you to bring your writers to produce. We're still fighting this fight. Writers, all of you guys coming up, and I said this a million times, Frankie and I've had these conversations with people, you guys have got to get on some sets. You guys live in Hollywood, for God's sake. In LA, period. You should, USC, all these, Chapman, you guys got to get on sets so that you have those experiences. So when you are blessed to get on a show and they do send you to set, you're not sitting there going, how? You're going, I'm familiar with. I have an understanding. I know how to talk to departments. I get what's going on there. Don't use the excuse that you don't know anybody. You can literally go on USC and all that and see what's going on in production. All that stuff exists. You know what I mean? So that's it. Thank you guys.
That's awesome advice. Anthony.
Yeah, I think all I would say is echo exactly what he would say, which to me, what it sounds a lot like, do everything you can to learn as much as possible when you're starting, because it's all going to be helpful in the long run. It is a marathon. I mean, I think, yes, we can point to a lot of like, oh, the system was this way and it's this way. But what I see is that a lot of the people who are good and who I respect and who are have longevity, they have their own infrastructure around them that keeps them up. And it took, some of them took a long time to get there. And obviously, and the ones that I've seen have a hard time didn't build that in a way that, in the idea that like all the relationships matter. Every job you work, every set you go to, you don't have to be everybody's friend all the time, but you know, find the people who you like, find the people who think the way you think, find the people who write or want to make movies that you want to make, watch shows, learn. Like it's never going to end.
That's great. Thank you. Does anyone else have any last thoughts or advice for anybody? Shay?
Yeah. Okay. So I will just keep this really short and sweet by saying that you will hear no nonstop in this business. Like no. My biggest piece of advice is don't let a million no's get in the way of one yes, because that yes really could be it for you. And even if it's not, it's still a way to start your path. And this reminds me of a quote by Stephen King. I'm not sure if I'm saying it right, but because I always thought it was cool, is that he said when he first started that he would just get back nonstop stacks of rejection notes, and that he bought a nail and he put it on a wall and he hung up all of his rejection notes. And then he says, by the time the nail was full, the notes wouldn't stop coming. So he bought a bigger nail. for more notes. So if you're going to write, just make sure you have a big nail.
Oh, Christina, go ahead.
Thank you for having us. I really enjoyed this conversation. And I think the conversation that you saw, it's like, we all genuinely like working together and collaborating and help amplifying each other. So that's just something that I get personal gratitude from. I would say my piece of advice to people is to, like, especially if you're starting out or if you like trying to figure out something new to write, I feel like I hear a lot of people trying to like game what's hot. Like, I know us coming out of the strike, everyone's like, all people want are like procedurals and like whatever. If that's what you want to write, I think you should go ahead and do that. But I think that as long as you're in a space where you're writing, especially for samples, it is a written version of like who you are. It can tell a lot of people not only what your voice is, but like what you find funny, like where you're from, like lots of things about you that are ineffable to you. So why not just write the thing that you're interested in or that is your, that you are passionate about or that is your passion, as opposed to like trying to twist your brain into it, not being like, I think I could write a procedural. I don't know. I'm like so bad at mystery. I feel like the times when I've tried to like force myself into a thing that like I either don't know how to write or I'm not really like, that's not my genre, that's when I've sort of failed. And all the times that I've just like written like a weird thing about a ghost that like that ends up being fine and working out. So write what you care about, I would say.
Yeah.
I want to suggest that for the writers just starting out, that you be very careful of what books you read and what classes you take. Because if you are taking a class or reading a book by someone who has optioned material to many of the major studios, it's like taking flying lessons for me. I could read a book on how to pilot a plane and be confident enough to plausibly convince you that I would know how to fly, but you'd wind up dead. So that's what happens when you're reading books from people who've never had things produced, because you learn about writing when you go through the process. It's the same thing with all of these companies that make a lot of money saying, take a class from this person, it's only $59. And for that, you'll get coverage on your script. If you don't have someone who knows how to write giving you coverage, it's not going to help you. So that's my advice.
That's great advice. Thank you all so much for being on the show. I really appreciate everything you all had to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lorian.